And welcome to this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier here on KDLL 91.9 FM, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm your host, Bill Howell. As always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. Well, we've got some interesting interviews and segments for you this month, but as always, let's get started with beer news. On Friday, November 15th, the winners of the 2024 Alaska Beer Awards were announced at 49th State Brewing in Anchorage. There were over 225 entries from 24 different competitors in 21 different categories. After double-blind evaluation by judges, the winners were selected. For a complete list of the winners, check the kdll.org website. But special mention to Naptown Brewing in Sterling, which won 3 bronze medals and 1 gold medal, and to Grace Ridge Brewing of Homer that took home a silver. Girdwood Brewing Company won a silver medal at this year's Great American Beer Festival in the Fruited American Sour Ale category for its Funkberry Pie Ale. We'll have Josh Hegna and Brett Marenko from Girdwood on later in the show to discuss, among other things, just what it entails to enter beer into the competition at the Great American Beer Festival. Elysian Brewing, which is owned by Anheuser-Busch, will shut down its Seattle production brewery effective December 31st. The tap room at that location is now closed permanently. One source reported that as many as 90 employees will lose their jobs as a result. Elysian Brewing opened in Seattle in 1996 and led the local beer industry in terms of innovation and creativity for years. The company was acquired by Anheuser-Busch in 2015. In August of 2023, Anheuser-Busch jettisoned 8 of its craft breweries, selling them to Tilray Brands, a Canadian cannabis company. Though Elysian Brewing was not one of the brands included in the deal, it was obvious that AB was changing its craft beer strategy. About a year ago, Elysian's employees at the production facility voted to join the Teamsters Union. Since then, the employees and Anheuser-Busch have failed to reach a labor agreement. Up next, we'll have Sasan Mosasanen, the CEO of Denali Brewing. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Seoul, Dotna. We'll be right back with our next segment.
Hello, this is John Jackson, host and producer of Deeper Cuts Radio. Deeper Cuts features an artist, band, or topic. We play great music not often heard, mixing and mingling genre and era, creating a unique playlist for your listening pleasure. Tune in Fridays at 9 p.m. on KDLL 91.9 FM in beautiful Kenai, Alaska. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Seoul, Dotna. Up next, an interview with Sasan, the CEO of Twister Creek Incorporated, a.k.a. Denali Brewing, Denali Spirits, Cider Works, a whole empire. Sasan, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you, Bill?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Yeah, let's talk about that because you guys are, correct me if I'm wrong, are you guys the only employee-owned brewery in Alaska now?
No, that's I'm really happy to say that we're not the only one. Alaska Brewing Company was an ESOP or employee stock ownership plan company well before us. And in fact, Marcy Larson sat down with me over a meal or two and explained to me how it was. So I certainly don't want to take that away from her. But yeah, I think we're at least one of two.
Okay. So you're the second one. So why don't you describe, before we get into brewing and everything, what's going on, why don't you describe what that means and why that's kind of unique? I mean, people here employee-owned, but they don't often understand exactly what that means.
You know, outside of talking about beer or how to make beer, this is probably my next favorite subject, is the idea of employee ownership. So it was, for me, a personal thing that started at our inception with this idea of how do you define the success of a company. You know, one of the measures that we placed on ourselves was, how do we transition to becoming 100% employee owned? And that was kind of one of the definitions of success that we had. And so we're not quite at that 100% ownership yet. It's going to take us a while to get there. But the general gist of it is, when we transition into a corporate structure, which means you have shares of ownership in the company, over time, through an IRS and Department of Labor qualified plan, you are able to issue shares of the company to your employees. And what I love about it, in addition to the general idea that you put your time in, you put your dues in, and, you know, an honest day's work should end up leading a person eventually to being able to retire, and having something in their retirement plan that they can show for their time working for said employer. And so, you know, it's, you know, an ESOP is, it's not a get rich quick plan. It's a commitment to seeing a company grow and succeed. And so it's quite a lengthy process. We hire an independent third party to do evaluation of our business to establish the value of each participant's shares. So the value of ownership can go up or down depending on the performance of the company. And what we have found is, you know, after being an ESOP for almost 8 years now, our employees really have embraced that culture of ownership. You know, they even though I'm the founding partner, many of them act just like you would expect an owner to act. They really care about maintaining efficiency and not seeing, you know, beer hit the ground for no reason. And so through this mutual effort of employees working together, your hope is that the value of your company goes up. And then on an annual basis, we're able to make a contribution into the employees' accounts, which issues shares of ownership. And then basically it works out to where if the employee retires or for whatever reason they no longer work for us, they basically get whatever the value of their shares are. And then those shares, since they have been retired from the employee who is retired, goes back into the pool to get reinvested into the employee stock option plan. And the hope is that, you know, you become 100% employee owned.
What percentage are you at right now?
Right now we're sitting just over 10%.
You forecast how long to transition to
100%? Well, you know, in an ideal situation, we have an opportunity where you can have large transitions. Right now, we've been making, you know, a couple percent contributions annually into the ESOP. You know, hopefully I'm not saying too much, but the value of our employee retirement plan is over $1 million now. Mm-hmm. So it's not an insignificant contribution into the employees' retirements. But, you know, ideally, somewhere in the next couple of years, we can create an opportunity where something as much as 25% or 25% more of the number of shares can get transitioned into the ESOP. And then, you know, another way that companies become 100% employee owned is by going to the bank and borrowing money and doing what's called a leveraged ESOP. Those types of transactions invariably are what take you across the finish line to the final 100% mark.
But obviously the bank would want to see that there's like sufficient equity already created before
you're spot on. I mean, basically right now, you know, I think you've been to our facility. We've got not an insignificant amount invested in this facility, and bank basically owns us.
Right.
And so our goal for this transition into kind of becoming 100% employee owned is to more or less eliminate our bank debt on, you know, equipment and real estate. And once we've been able to lower that debt, that could create enough equity in the business where the employees could then go out, leverage and purchase basically shares of the company and become 100% employee owned. You know, I'm also considered an employee of the company as well. So I also am able to receive the benefits of this employee stock option. Not only do I just philosophically believe in the culture of, you know, employee ownership, it also benefits me too, personally. So I have a lot, you know, vested in this idea of trying to see this happen. You know, I love the idea of, you know, basically me being a 90-year-old guy and finding some responsibility here in this building and still contributing to being an employee, but possibly, you know, not having all of the administrative responsibilities I have. And so this, right, for me, can also be a path towards retaining my employment, but also giving the new generation of employees ability to grow and progress and see, you know, opportunities to grow with the company beyond just being a brewer.
Right. Well, you know, that's what I was going to say. This, to me, this sounds like a good example of succession planning. Because
you're
not going to be here forever, and you know, but at some point, so something's got to happen.
Christy and I have three daughters, and you know, if they want to get involved, you know, my oldest daughter has spent quite a bit of time distilling here with me. So it's not that they're not interested, but if they want to get their foot in the door, so to speak, they're going to have to put in their dues, just like everyone else. There's no succession plan that Christy and I ever had that did not include, you know, putting in your dues and working your way into positions of responsibility and ownership.
Well, that sounds good. So let's change the subject a little and let's talk about your current operations, because I believe I saw where you guys have shut down the brew pub in town for renovation. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's opened back up again. And it just turned out beautiful. The roof that was on the brew pub was over 60 years old.
Ooh.
And was, you know, poorly insulated as well. So we basically removed the metal roofing, added, you know, modern day levels of insulation to the roof and put a shingle roof back on and did some timber frame work out in front. So that project is done. We had some other just kind of general repair and maintenance work. It's kind of hard in the busy summer to get your maintenance work always caught up. So it's not uncommon for us to, you know, maybe spend, somewhere between a couple days to a week or two every year, kind of in the late fall, early winter, and just try to get caught up on all these projects. So yeah, that took place. We're open back up again.
And have you done anything recently with any new equipment or anything like that at the big brewery?
Not specifically in terms of kind of new things that we have been working on. We're about to, probably by the time this gets broadcasted, we will either be packaging or about to release our new winter seasonal. For those of you that are kind of familiar with our winter seasonal in years past, we've had a German style dark lager or Schwarz beer that was our winter seasonal. I really love that beer. I thought it was, you know, really one of our better crafted beers. But since then, we've just continuing to try to innovate and come out with some new ideas. So this winter, we will be coming out with a new winter seasonal called Tree Run. And then, interestingly enough, I never thought I'd say this, but we're sometime right before Christmas looking to release a non-alcoholic beer as well. The NA is a project that is in fermentation right now. We're actually brewing it this week, and we'll hopefully have it released right before Christmas. So that's kind of new and exciting on the beer front.
Well, as you're talking about seasonals, let me say, give you a quick plug for that Wee Heavy that you guys put out every so often. That is one excellent beer. I love whenever it pops up, I always grab myself a couple of six packs and string it out because I really love that one. But that Schwartz beer that you were talking about, that's excellent as well. I've had that several times.
I'd be happy to know the Wee Heavy is in fermentation right now as well.
Excellent.
It's part of our kind of annual specialty beers. And
yes. I think I'm down to my last can, so good. I'm glad some more's coming out.
Well, your timing is good. We actually dropped the fermentation temperature to kind of start cold crashing it last week, so it's currently sitting at 54 Fahrenheit on its way to 32, and we'll be packaging it soon.
I'll be watching for it. So let's talk about your distilling business a little bit. I've seen some of your stuff show up in some of the local stores. Where do you stand on that? Anything new, special, getting ready to be released for the holidays or anything?
Let me tell you kind of what I'm working on today. We're distilling an American single malt whiskey that has a grain bill, which is seven different kind of brewer's grains that are in there. The reason I said yeast is because we were talking about the Scottish, the Wee Heavy that we do. And basically on an annual basis, what we do is take that Scottish ale yeast, propagate it up and divert it into three different kind of streams of beverages, so to speak. So obviously we make the Scottish beer that you're familiar with, but we also use the yeast strain from that after we've propagated it up to go into the seven malt whiskey that I'm distilling today. And then we also make a barley wine that's kind of based on our barley wine recipe, but it's been modified to be a distiller's wash, and that's up in fermentation next. So it's kind of a really fun period of distillation that I'm right in the middle of right now, with the seven malt transitioning into a barley wine, which is meant to be a whiskey. So just a lot of really continuing experimentation and innovation.
Just a second, that whiskey, that's going to have to be 3 years in the barrel, right, before you can sell it?
We actually just did a barrel select program with Three Bears, and their team came to our facility and picked a four-year-old version of that barley wine, and we did a release at their place of that. So if you want an idea of kind of what that barley wine whiskey tastes after 4 years of maturation, they've got it at some of the different Three Bears stores. Some of these kind of more high-end grain bill whiskeys that we do, we typically try to mature them, you know, more than the 2-3 years. So the seven malt, the barley wine, those are all getting somewhere in the 4+ years of maturation time.
So what else are you guys up to? Anything new on the mead cider front or anything else in the beer that you want to tell everybody about that they should be watching for besides the new seasonal?
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever kind of stop tinkering. Just to kind of bop back to the distillery for a quick second, then I can tell you what's going on in the winery as well. We last month released kind of our house whiskey. So, you know, if you're familiar with our whiskey program, we are on batch 23 was the last release that we did. And every one of those batches had, you know, different grain bill or different yeast or different distillation methodology or, you know, all three of those things were different, with the very specific intention of making each whiskey unique to itself. And, you know, basically after, the distillery is going on year eight, we basically finally came up with a house whiskey that we released last month. And we kind of consolidated everything into a new custom bottle that we had designed. So in 2025, you'll kind of see hopefully more of our whiskey, but also be releasing a bourbon, a rye, and we've been making an agave spirit in rum, which we had in our smaller format bottles, but all of those spirits are transitioning into new custom 750 milliliter bottles. And we're hoping sometime in the kind of spring to really see our capacity to release larger volumes of that go up. I mean, some of our batch whiskey releases have only been a couple hundred bottles. Maybe some of the larger ones were 400 or 500 bottles. But we're finally able to get to the point where we're able to hopefully stop running out of the whiskeys and maybe try to maintain, some year-round presence as opposed to kind of having it come and go depending on availability.
Any plans to make a peated single malt? I know we can't call it a scotch because it's not made in Scotland, but you got any ideas in that direction?
Well, our whole distillery's focus is inspired by the Scottish tradition. So if you drink our house whiskey or even have, some of our more recent small batch releases, our brewing methodology and distillation methodology is very similar to what you would see in Scotland. We lauter our wash or lauter our wort in beer parlance, which is what they do in Scotland, which then translates into us not distilling on the grain. At least our single malts, American single malts are like that. The bourbon we ferment on the corn and distill on the corn. But what that translates into is a whiskey that's really very elegant and delicate. It's not intended to assault you with a lot of like over-oaked flavors that you sometimes get from maybe kind of more assertive distillery. So it's what we were always going for was a very elegant approach, which is kind of what the Scots do. To answer your question about the peated, I'm embarrassed to say this. I'm not personally a huge fan of a tremendous amount of peat flavor. We have some alder smoked malts that we got from Main Stem Malting Company down in Washington State. They are a salmon safe malt house, which basically means no fertilizers and no irrigation in the growth of their barley. And then they malted using some alder wood. And we have we did a small batch release, which was intended to be our interpretation of kind of a peated whiskey, peated scotch. And it turned out great, and we have probably done that project, or I should say the distillation, at least on three separate occasions. I'm sitting here looking at one of the barrels that's now approaching 4.5 years old. So we intend on releasing stuff like that again in the future, but it's not specifically a peat flavor. It's more of an alder smoke, which will kind of contribute that smoke flavor.
Well, it all sounds wonderful. Anything else you want to make sure everybody knows about?
I promised I'd get to the winery. I think some of the new fun stuff that's coming out, we about a month ago released a fireweed session mead. So base of the fermentation is 100% honey. Kept it session, so its ABV is down below 6%. And it's just a light, refreshing carbonated mead in which we took kind of fireweed petals and did a maceration there using that as an additional flavor and color component. It's just got this beautiful kind of pink hue to the mead. And so we've been dabbling in a lot of different styles of session meads, and it's kind of appropriate just for the holiday season. It's got a higher level of carbonation, and it has enough sweetness to kind of pair up with whatever you're eating, but it's not cloyingly sweet. It actually finishes kind of on the drier side when you think about meads. We have that and a pink guava mead, I think, that's floating around in Alaska right now. And if you guys are interested in that, it's not a common style to do a carbonated kind of specialty meads like that. But if that's something you're interested in, we have a couple examples of that out there right now.
Sounds cool. I know there's people out there that really like those, so that's good. Well, hey, Sasan, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to talk to us. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm always grateful to you for getting the word out about all the great producers out there.
All righty. Take care. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Now we'll be right back with our next segment. The holidays are traditionally a time when we gather together with our friends and family and indulge in some excellent meals. In this segment, I want to focus on selecting beers that will pair well with traditional holiday foods. To begin, let's talk about some beer styles that pair well with the traditional holiday meal of roast turkey and all the trimmings. First up, there are Oktoberfest or Märzen beers. Typically released in early fall, these beers pair nicely with a wide variety of snacks and starters, including roasted and salted nuts and pumpkin seeds, as well as fresh, mild, or sweet cheeses. Stronger imperial versions easily carry over into the rest of the meal. You'll find their understated but interesting flavor profile pairs well with almost any course. Next, consider a Belgian-style Saison or farmhouse ale. These bright, spicy, and crisp golden-hued beers are champagne-like in effervescence and perfect for the season. With hints of citrus peel and ginger, farmhouse ales and saisons have a firm balance of bitter and sweet. They pair nicely with salty or seed-covered crackers served with strong, funky cheeses, light salads as a first course, and seasonal fall desserts. As part of a main course accompaniment featuring roast chicken or turkey, you'll find the subtle complexities of this style worth journeying through a meal with. It also pairs well with most seafood, such as crab meat salad. Also Belgian-inspired are golden strong ales, like Duvel or Midnight Sun's Fallen Angel. These light-colored golden ales are perfectly suited for a first course that includes a bright salad highlighting fresh green apple, dried cranberries, and a poppy seed vinaigrette. With its added sugars, Belgian-style golden strong ale is bubbly, sweet, and has a spicy Belgian yeast character with subtle notes of banana and clove. Serve it with a dessert course between bites of apple or cherry pie, or offer it to those who typically choose a Chardonnay to go with their dinner. They will appreciate this beer throughout the meal. Beer brewed from rye also deserves serious holiday consideration. Rye beers have a malty sweetness and rich rye color, along with a spicy and delightfully bitter citrusy bite, that makes a good first course selection with strong cheese and salty snacks, like those on a traditional charcuterie board. It also stands up nicely to the Thanksgiving plate without getting lost amid the rich and savory flavors typical of the meal. Gravy-laden plates with bread stuffing and roasted garlic mash are ideal pairings for a Belgian-style quadruple, an earthy, complex, and malt-forward beer. Equally interesting as a dessert pairing with caramel or molasses-forward desserts like pecan pie or sweet potato casserole, this brew is one to savor from the main course through the end of a meal. Strongly smelling of caramelized banana with a spicy clove flavor that becomes more noticeable as it warms, an Imperial Weizenbock is almost a dessert in itself. Pouring a rich, dark honey or caramel color, it's ideally served with banana bread pudding and vanilla ice cream, alongside creme brulees, or as a carbonated counterweight to that classic New Orleans dessert, Bananas Foster, with some cinnamon-spiced whipped cream. This beer is a unique and intriguing way to finish a meal. Imperial stouts have a deep roastiness, balanced by chocolatey bitterness and hints of anise. Serve this style alone as an after-dinner treat with rich chocolate ice cream, coffee, and cinnamon almond biscotti, or with custard pies like sweet potato and pumpkin for a memorable end to your dinner party. No list of holiday beer pairings would truly be complete without mentioning barley wine. Often aged in bourbon barrels, these rich and raisiny beers are heavy on the malts. Truly meant for sipping, barley wines move over into booze territory and will likely appeal to fans of caramel and malt-dominant spirits. These thick, decadent beers are desserts in and of themselves, though in Britain they are traditionally paired with aged Stilton cheese. If you find yourself as a guest rather than the host of a holiday meal, may I strongly suggest that instead of the customary bottle of wine, you consider bringing a bottle of beer? A beer from Belgium or brewed in the Belgian style, packaged in a handsome 750-milliliter cork bottle, makes a wonderful presentation. And if you are a beer drinker like me, it also ensures that there will be a decent craft beer to drink alongside your own meal. Whichever style of beer you choose to accompany your holiday meals, I hope you all enjoy the season.
The KDLL Board of Directors meets at 5:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month at KDLL Studios in the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District building in Kenai and over Zoom. Meetings are open to the public. If you have an item you'd like to submit for board consideration, email info@kdll.org, or if you're interested in joining the board, call 907-513-1996.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. We've got a couple of the principals from Girdwood Brewing, Josh Hegna, the beer ambassador, and Brett Marenko, one of the brew engineers. So, gentlemen, how are you doing today?
Doing great, man. A little chilly, but we're staying warm inside.
All right. Well, hey, first things first, congratulations on winning the silver medal at GABF.
Thanks. That was huge. So that was that's the first time we've ever submitted any beer. So we were humbled but stoked to come across the medal.
Yeah, I understand you was in the Fruited American Sour Ale and you won it for your guys' Funkberry Pie, right?
Yep, we got a silver medal for Funkberry Pie.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because I don't think most of our listeners probably have any appreciation of what it takes to actually enter a beer in the GABF.
Yeah, so you get the notification, I think it's in like the middle of the summer, kind of July timeframe, is when you have to register your beers. They don't actually get submitted till maybe 2 or 3 months later. And then maybe a month after that is when the judging actually happens. Any brewery knows that logistically shipping stuff in and out of Alaska is not cheap. And then, you know, mailing beer down there to be judged.
And how much beer do they expect you to submit?
I believe I think it was something like 10 or 12 cans. So it's about three, four packs.
And do they accept beer in any other format? Does it need to be canned or bottled?
Mainly just packaged, like, you know, no kegs, bottles, cans, crowlers, stuff like that.
Okay. And I wonder, too, how is it kept? Because, again, if you just take it over to Ups or someplace, are they going to keep it cool when it's being shipped south in August or something like that?
We ended up shipping it like 2-day air, okay. UPS, so definitely became like a pay to play thing because you're putting a lot of money on that beer.
Yeah.
The minute they get it, it's refrigerated and kept refrigerated until the competition. Okay. They're very adamant about that. Like, yeah, they take good care once you get it to them. But just packaging cans, sending them through the mail.
It'd be kind of like shipping fish, right? You're looking at if you want it to really show up
there. There's no guarantee. It's not refrigerated or kept frozen or anything. So with beer, it's not too bad if you travel over that sort of time. If it's cold to start, I feel like it, you know, it's not, ideally it's not going to get too hot, but you don't know, honestly, because it could get lost in transit. We had some buddies that theirs just kind of got like lost in transit. They had to send it again, and that's just all on you. You don't get reimbursed for that. So, yeah. Just the whole logistic planning of like, okay, it's July. What beers are we going to have available? Especially IPAs. We want them as fresh as possible. And most of our beers, so it's, you know, there's a lot of just pre-planning ahead to go through that. And then, like you said, logistically, the cost of just shipping stuff there.
Did you submit any other beers, or was this the only one?
We did. We submitted, I think, maybe 4 or 5, a couple IPAs, I think a lager as well, and then Funkberry Pie.
Well, cool. Again, congratulations on it. Like I said, that's a pretty high honor to win a medal there.
The Fruited Sour category is one of the higher entered ones. Doesn't quite compare to some of the IPA categories, but I think there's something like 160, 170 other beers submitted from around the U.S. So I was pretty stoked to get silver.
I've often said if it wasn't for all the logistical difficulty, a lot more Alaskan brewers would have medals from GABF. It's just such a pain to try and get anything down there to get it entered.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm pretty stoked on this one too, Bill, because it's one of our, top three seller that we got here. And, you know, when the guys originally presented the idea, I was a little bit confused about a graham cracker fruited lactose beer, but holy cow, it's amazing how many non-beer drinkers like this beer. It's just a real approachable beer. So
yeah, and kind of what Josh was letting me, like, we've known for a while that it was a hit with consumers, so that's kind of why this is even cooler, is to get that, you know, justification from the level of judging that they have at GABF. So it's, you know, that kind of hits all the marks there.
Yeah, we thought it just looked sexy on Instagram, but people love it.
As long as we're talking about medals, you guys took a couple home from the Alaska Beer Awards, right?
Yeah, we did. That just happened this past Friday, or the presentation of the medals. And we got gold medal for Space Tornado, silver medal for No Woman, No Cryo, a bronze medal for Down the Chute, a gold medal for our Fest Bear, and then
Funkberry Pie.
Funkberry Pie. Can't forget that one. I got a bronze medal as well.
So. Wow. That's interesting. It gets a silver at the GABF, but only a bronze when it's being bounced up against the Alaskan beers.
Yeah, we were joking about that. But being a judge myself in the AKA Beer Awards, and just disclaimer, you can't judge any of the categories that you enter, so there's no bias right there. But just having been a judge in that, it's a very difficult job judging beers. You just get palate fatigue so quick. It's just, and I think maybe it's just a testament to the quality of the entries anyways. Yeah. Like, there's a ton of good beers out there.
Like,
so,
I said, there's plenty of good competition up here. And I've judged myself, and I know exactly wherever you speak. It is tough. Well, hey, what else are you guys up to besides winning medals left, right, and center? You got anything new and exciting coming out anytime soon?
Yeah, I think I can let Brett speak on the beers in a bit here, but we guess we got Uller Fueller coming out Friday, December 7th, and we're going to kind of stack that on. We've got those live music and entertainment permits that
right. We
get four of per year, or we can apply for four per year, so we're going to use one of those, and we're doing a Northern Aspects Film Festival, which is like short ski videos, and so we're going to do that, and then we're stacking on a live music concert after that. And yeah, hoping in 2025 we can get rid of some of these goofy entertainment laws. And I know the Brewers Guild's got a beer coming out. I don't know if they've released that yet, so I probably shouldn't tell too much about it. But we're definitely going to be advocating to get rid of the, you know, at least that entertainment stuff. We don't find that very fair. But
you guys aren't really set up to take advantage under the new rules because you don't have a kitchen, right? So you can't go to a restaurant eating place like some of the tap rooms are doing.
Well, we're exploring some ideas there, so stay tuned, Bill.
Okay.
We're definitely not going to put a kitchen on, but you know, we have the food trucks going out here, so yeah, we'll see.
Okay. Know. All right. So Brett, what about the beers? What's new in the zoo?
Oh, it's our newest beer we just put on tap actually on Friday as well, is Anchorwood, and that was a collaboration with Anchorage Distillery. We aged a similar beer to our Girdwood Reserve, the base beer. We aged that in two of their barrels, a Palmer wheat and a Palmer rye, two whiskey barrels. And that beer sat in there for upwards of about 2.5-3 years. And then we conditioned on a little bit of coconut and vanilla and just released that on Friday. And that's tasting super good. So that's our newest release. Other than that, we have Abbey Savvy is a kind of double IPA that we release at the beginning of November every year to celebrate and donate to the Avalanche Awareness Month, and we give money to the local Avalanche Center. That's our freshest IPA on top right now. But it's sort of our, you know, slow season before the ski mountain opens, so before Alyeska opens. So we're just kind of holding tight on our current tap list. But we got a couple IPAs coming out down the pike here. So
And we're doing a cool project tomorrow with the taproom attendants and the rest of the staff, where we're kind of, we let them kind of choose the style of beer to brew and then pick the name, and they're going to work with the twins tomorrow brewing the beer and seeing the whole process, so that front of the house gets to experience the, you know, from the grain to glass and branding and all that. So we're pretty excited about that too. So I won't reveal the style yet, but we'll just stay tuned on social media. But yeah, that'll be a fun project.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. That's always good to involve, like you say, get the front of the house so that they understand what's going on. That Anchorwood you mentioned, are you planning to enter that into the barley wine competition in January, or have you got something else for there? You're not going to enter anything.
We may. Right now it's draft only, but we might pull some off to save for that. And then we usually enter Uller Fueller, kind of. That's our like winter warmer.
Right.
That's a pretty broad category, but that one has always gotten good remarks in that category. So we'll probably enter that one again in there.
So anything else coming up that you guys want to make sure folks are aware of? You've got the food trucks there. I can't remember. Do they stay there through the winter?
Yeah, we've got some, you know, it's pretty cool that the relationship we have with our food trucks are almost all local now. And all these businesses have started up after us, and a lot of them set up at our shop solely. So yeah, we've got food trucks every day through the winter, you know, with the exception of Thanksgiving and Christmas. But yeah, we're open noon to 9 on weekdays, 11 to 9 on weekends. And yeah, like I said, there's a food truck here on site every day. It's pretty cool to have those guys on board. And then, you know, in regards to other stuff, we've got a winter sip and shop market coming up on Small Business Saturday. And yeah, then it's probably just getting ready for ski season, which opens up November 30th down here. So excited about that.
Cool. And if people want to know what food trucks are there, they should check your social media, right?
Yeah, well, I think our website's probably the best. But yeah, we try to plug them on social media all the time, but our website, that stays updated.
Yeah, because we like to keep them kind of fresh and rotating, so they usually change out every 2 or 3 days. But on weekends and busier days, we have two to make sure we can keep up with demand as well.
But yeah, that includes, we got a Japanese kind of ramen food truck, a New Mexican food truck, the sweet and savory crepe food truck, a cheesesteak food truck going through the winter, and I'm trying to think if there's anything else.
Hungry Deckhand.
Oh, the Hungry Deckhand, yeah.
Grilled cheese sandwich, yeah. All the fixings.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
So yeah, keeping that vibe alive.
All righty. Well, hey, gents, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I really appreciate it. We'll keep an eye out for some of your new releases coming out.
We currently have pretty good can stock at La Bodega. This time of year, we have extra capacity that we can do those drops, and it's nice that La Bodega is accommodating of us and willing to just take it kind of on a whim. But yeah, that's the extent of our can distribution. But they have a pretty good spread there right now.
Well, any of our listeners that are heading up to Anchorage, if they can't stop by the brewery itself, there's a place you can hit at La Bodega and pick up some of their stuff in cans. All righty. Well, hey, again, thank you, gents. And if I don't see you before then, I should see you in January at the Big Shindig in Anchorage.
All right. Cheers, Bill.
Sounds good. See you, Bill.
This is KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Sol Dotna. We'll be right back with our next segment. It's the end of November, which means it is now time to get really serious about Christmas shopping for the beer lover in your life. As I do every year, I'm going to make a few gift recommendations for your beer-loving friends and relatives. I'll start with a couple of books. First up, there's Around the World in 80 Beers, A Global History of Brewing by Martin Cornell. Cornell is a distinguished historian of beer with several excellent prior books to his credit. His latest book isn't a travelogue, but rather a deep dive into the history of beer, going back 13,000 years to the dawn of civilization, right up to the modern day. The book consists of short chapters on 80 different brews, each chosen to illustrate some important facet of brewing history. The range of different beers covered is astonishing, not just the well-known, such as IPA, Pilsner, and Imperial Stout, but the rare and little heard of, such as Norwegian Kvek Ale or Jopski, a thick, black, amazingly strong beer recently revived in Poland. It uncovers some strange stories, such as the surprising popularity of milk stout among the urban working class in South Africa, and knocks some myths on the head, such as the allegedly ancient history of Irish red ale. All in all, it's a fascinating recounting of the amazing history of our favorite beverage. It's imported from Britain, so it's a bit spendy, but you can find it in hardback or Kindle versions on Amazon for $35 and $19, respectively. Another excellent choice for a book to give the beer lover in your life is Beer, A Tasting Course by Mark Dredge. Dredge has written over a half dozen books on beer before this latest offering. Crack open this book and enjoy a series of guided tastings of more than 50 different beer styles, from smoked black lager to sour fermented wild ales, triple green hopped IPAs, and cask matured barley wines. With each tasting, the author teaches you to identify how aroma, taste, texture, and finish combine to create the distinctive flavor profile of the particular beer style. He explains which unique ingredients and aspects of the brewing process combine to produce each style, while his quick reviews of the best examples from around the world will lead you to explore further. To help establish your beer palate, the course starts with a solid grounding in the range of flavors found in beer and the art of detecting them, opening your nose, mind, and throat to the complete sensory experience of flavor and pouring the perfect glass. This book will let you travel through time and across the globe to grasp the ongoing story of beer, its heritage, and its innovation. It also teaches you how to pair beer with food and to cook with beer. Overall, it's an outstanding overview of the many different aspects of craft beer culture. It's available for $18 in hardcover or $11 in Kindle format on Amazon. I'd also humbly recommend my own small contribution to beer lore, Alaska Beer, Liquid Gold in the Land of the Midnight Sun, published by Arcadia Publishing. While it was published over 9 years ago, it still remains the only book I am aware of to focus exclusively on the history of beer and brewing in Alaska. And what a fascinating history it is. Alaska's fermented legacy explains the fiercely independent spirit that propelled the state's beer drinkers through the gold rush and sustained them through Prohibition. You'll see that many of the issues confronting today's craft brewers in Alaska, like overly burdensome state regulations and competition from large outside breweries, have deep historical roots. It's available in both paperback and electronic versions from local bookstores or on Amazon for $22. Next, consider the gift of glassware. Finding a beer glass you really like can be tricky sometimes. I've cycled through quite a few variations myself, looking for glasses that are big enough to hold a full 16 ounces of beer plus head, sturdy enough for a klutz like me not to break, yet still doing a good job of both showcasing and delivering the delicious brew to my palate. A couple of years ago, I stumbled on what I consider to be just about the perfect glass in a liquor store in Seattle. It's called the Final Touch Craft Beer Glass and holds 20 ounces. I've never seen them for sale in Alaska, but a set of two sells on Amazon for $28, which is well worth the price in my opinion. If you've got a beer-loving friend who only has lousy shaker pints to drink out of, a couple of nice glasses would make a great gift. Finally, you can always fall back on giving the gift of beer itself. If you know what the target of your gift giving likes, head for one of our local stores and pick something out along with a couple of bottles for yourself. If you're unsure about picking out specific brews, gift cards to our local breweries make a great substitute. Either way, giving the gift of beer certainly captures the spirit of the holidays.
Hello, this is Charlissa Megan, known as Truth Is.
And I'm her trusty sidekick, Eva Knutson.
And we are the Sound Hunters.
Join us on Wednesday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. as we dig through our old mixtape collections and share our favorite eclectic musical finds.
That's the Sound Hunters on Wednesday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. right here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Now it's time for What's Bill Drinking Now? Since my October show was a live broadcast during KDLL's membership drive, I didn't get to talk about the beers I tried that month. Here are some I've tasted lately. I picked up a couple of 16-ounce cans of barley wine from Black Spruce Brewing, located in Fairbanks. Head brewer Carrie Fristo has been making quite a name for himself with his award-winning barley wines. The beer is named Voracious Tendencies Black Barley Wine and comes in two versions, one aged in bourbon barrels and one aged in rum barrels. Both were excellent, but I would give the nod to the rum version, which was confirmed when that version won a gold medal in the Alaska Beer Awards. These beers are worth seeking out. I was lucky enough to be sent a few cans of Harbor Mountain Brewing's Chum Dog Billionaire Hazy Imperial IPA, a silver award winner in the Imperial IPA category at the Alaska Beer Awards. It poured a dark amber with a big cream-colored head. The American hop flavor and aroma were strong, with lots of hop bitterness up front and plenty of hop flavor on the back end. Hazy IPAs aren't typically my thing, but I definitely make an exception for this one. I also sampled a bottle of Glacier Brewhouse's Jim Beam Double Barrel Aged Ice Bock. This is a very rare and difficult style to brew, but Glacier executed it to perfection, with the barrel finishing adding some excellent grace notes. At 10% alcohol by volume, this brew demands respect, but I found that it went down dangerously easy. Finally, I'm happy to report that Samuel Smith's Yorkshire Stingo has been released again and is available here in Alaska. This barrel-aged beer has not been released for the last 5 years, but is now back with a new label design. The beer is aged in oak casks in the brewery's cellar, where some of the casks date back to more than a century, with the individual oak staves being replaced by the brewery's coopers over the years. Gradually, the casks soak in more and more of the character of the ale fermented in the famous Yorkshire stone squares, then impart fruit, raisin, treacle, toffee, Christmas pudding, and slightly oaky flavors to the Stingo, which is then naturally conditioned in the bottle. It's truly an amazing piece of brewing history and one every beer lover should sample. This month's closing quote is from the great Edgar Allan Poe. "Filled with mingled cream and amber, I will drain that glass again. Such hilarious visions clamber through the chamber of my brain. Quaintest thoughts, queerest fancies, come to life and fade away. What care I how time advances? I am drinking ale today." May each and every one of you have a very Merry Christmas. Until next time, cheers.